I've been thinking a lot about a phrase, a line from a piece of Christmas music. And I want to share it with you and then have you share it back. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices. The weary world rejoices. I like that line. I think of that line a lot. And I've been thinking of that line because it says something. First of all, it says there are things that make the world weary. And we all know what it's like to be weary. But it also says that there is something about the arrival of Christ which brings a thrill of hope, which overcomes weariness with rejoicing. And that seems significant to me. So let's use that line as our refrain for this sermon together. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices. One of the things that makes the world weary is money. Money makes us weary. Balancing your checkbook is rarely an energizing activity, right? Money makes the world weary. And it's the many things about money that make us weary. The fear that there's not enough to go around. The idea that no matter how well you handle your money, there's always some turkey who's going to come along and tell you what you could be doing better. So you never feel triumphant about money. Money makes the world weary. Money generates all kinds of conflict and tension around the world. And yet, the Christ, God's creative word made flesh, comes to this couple who don't even have enough status and enough money to get a room in an inn. And the word made flesh is announced to shepherds, laborers who are poor. Whatever it is about money that makes the world weary, it does not capture God's relationship with us. God's relationship with us is not an economic relationship. This story tells us that. We start right out with that startling awareness. God is coming, and God is coming to do something new, and that something new is not economic. It's not going to engage the squabbles and the challenges and the fears that money brings. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices. The other thing that makes our world weary is status and power. We're all always trying to figure out how much power we have. And it may be just a little bit of power in terms of an office squabble, or it may be questions of global power and dominance, but we're always interested and always worried about and wearied by power. And we educate ourselves to be concerned about power very early on. At the early service, I asked the children to tell me about Jesus. Who is Jesus? And one of the little children said, "He's the most powerful." And I thought of all of those cartoons about having power that we show our little children. There is no power for Mary and Joseph. I'm sure they didn't want to make the journey to Bethlehem, but they had no choice because they had no power. They had not enough money and not enough influence to get a room. Rooms were being saved for important people who could spend a little more at the inn. Power. Power struggles weary the world. And the Christ, God's creative word made flesh, comes and upends all of those expectations. Those shepherds in the field, they get an announcement from an angel, and then they look up into the heavens and they see the heavenly army. And what is the heavenly army doing? Are they battling? Are they fighting? Are they expressing power? No, they're singing praises. The view that they get is not the strength of the heavenly host, but its worship. They get to see the heavenly army praising, not fighting. Power is one of those things in life that wearies us and wearies our world. And God in Christ comes and upends all of those power expectations and is born in a manger and not in a castle. And speaks the good news to people with no power. Poor people and shepherds. That brings a thrill of hope. A thrill of hope, a weary world rejoices. And what an amazing move God makes in this Word made flesh. We talk about status and power and money, and all of this has to do with having some kind of domain of control. We want to eke out some domain of control in our life where we feel secure, where we feel safe, where we feel like everything is going to be okay. And that's totally understandable, except that all control is a fantasy. And isn't it the case that struggling to maintain so much control makes us weary? Us and our whole world. And so God does this most amazing thing. God trusts human hands to hold their maker. What a startling move on God's part. This is not the sovereign God who needs to be in control of everything. This is a God who's willing to be so incredibly vulnerable, trusting human hands to hold their maker. The relationship that we have with God is not one of control. It's not one of dominance. It's not one of power over. It's not one of God pulling the strings and us getting in line. That's not the relationship that you get when God trusts human hands to hold their maker. The relationship you get when God trusts human hands to hold their maker is a relationship of vulnerability, of cooperation, of mercy and grace and forgiveness. That's the relationship that God and humanity have. And we resist it. We resist it because it implies that we have to work with God. It calls us to step up to our better selves. It's a challenge. But not the kind of challenge that comes from power over, but the challenge that comes from vulnerability, from shared power, and even shared weakness. A thrill of hope. The weary world rejoices. A weary world can rejoice at the news that we could bring of the birth of Christ. And a relationship between the divine and the human that's not economic, that's not about dominance and control, that's not about influence and status, but a relationship that's defined by sharing, by vulnerability, by companionship. A relationship that undoes all of those things that make our world so weary. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices.